In May of 1990, last century, can you remember that far back? In May of 1990, I graduated from seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. To celebrate, my brother Steve and I went to visit our cousin Joe, who was like a second brother to me. We met up in Portland, Oregon, where Joe lives. We spent time in the woods, time at the beach, time in Portland's Rose Gardens. We went whitewater rafting, we watched movies, and we visited Stonehenge. Not the one on the Salisbury Plain in England, but the recreation of Stonehenge, a full-scale replica of it at the Maryhill Art Museum in Klickitat County, Washington. The Stonehenge at Maryhill was the first World War I memorial in the United States. It was built in 1918, even before the war was over. Maryhill's Stonehenge was built to commemorate the sacrifice of 14 men from Klickitat County, soldiers, Marines, and sailors who died in World War I. 104 years ago on Friday, November 11th, 1918, at the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, the Great War, as it was called then, came to a stop. It was an armistice, literally a laying down of arms. It was not a peace. It was a cessation of fighting. Essentially, it was a surrender by Germany. And as the French leader, Marshal Foch, presciently predicted, it was a suspension of war that would last at most 20 years. The issues and conflicts that led to the Great War, beginning in the middle of 1914 and to its raging for the next 4.5 years, had not really even been addressed, much less resolved. Yet those 4.5 years resulted in over 35 million casualties, including 16.5 million deaths, 9.7 million military deaths on all sides, and 6.8 million civilian deaths on all sides. The United States entered the Great War in April 1917, almost 3 years after it had begun. Over 4.3 million U.S. personnel were deployed in World War I. 116,516 of them were killed, including those 14 from Klickitat County, Oregon, Washington, sorry. And over 204,000 more U.S. personnel were wounded. The 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. The 11th day of the 11th month. St. Martin's Day. It was fitting that the fighting ceased on St. Martin's Day, for November 11th has long been a pivotal day in the seasonal life of Europe, and nowhere more so than in Germany. November 11th marks the end of the commemorations of all the saints and all the faithful departed that began on November 1st and 2nd. It's a little more than an octave of 10 full days. St. Martin's Day also traditionally marked the end of the agricultural year and the beginning of the harvest. In much of Europe, up through the Middle Ages, November 11th marked the beginning of what was called St. Martin's Lent, a long, ascetic, and penitential observance of Advent, starting 2 or 3 weeks ahead of when we now begin that season. Even today, St. Martin's Day is among the very most popular saints' days in Europe. And who was St. Martin? Do you know him? Martin was the son of an officer in the Roman army. He was born in the year 316 or 317 in a small town in what is today Hungary. He was named for Mars, the Roman god of war. Because his father was an army officer, Martin was both expected and required to become one as well. Soldiering was the family business, and he didn't have any choice about it, really. However, before his army career began, his interest in Christianity was sparked. So he became a soldier at 15, as scheduled, but he was already a catechumen, studying and preparing for baptism. The most famous story about Martin is from this time before his baptism. Maybe you've heard it before. He encountered a beggar on a cold winter's night. Martin took his sword and cut into his cloak. Standard issue for Roman officers, a white cloak lined with lambskin. He gave half of it to the beggar. And can you imagine what he looked like going back to barracks wearing half a cloak? Probably got written up for it. That night he dreamed that Jesus, wearing that half a cloak, was in conversation with the angels and said, "Look there, that's Martin. Though he is only a catechumen, he has clothed me with his own cloak." Though he did not, in fact, beat his sword into a plowshare, Martin models for us how implements of war can be put to new uses, including creating garments for the poor. Because he was an officer, Martin was assigned a slave to assist him with various chores. As he sought to follow Jesus, Martin became convinced that slavery was wrong. So, he would serve his slave in a variety of ways rather than only being served by him. And when others would comment on this, Martin would reply that he saw no reason why he should not serve as well as be served. He subverted the system in a variety of ways while embedded within it. Martin shows us a mode of critique from within, of bearing witness from inside the dominant paradigm, from within the institutions and systems in which we find ourselves entangled. Though some historians and biographers have stumbled over these next facts, it appears that Martin fulfilled the requirement of 25 years of military service. After he was baptized, he continued to serve in the army. He was in the Imperial Guard, and as such was a non-combatant. The work of the Imperial Guard was to secure military posts, maintain public order, escort prisoners and dignitaries, things like that. As Martin's 25 years of service were drawing to a close, Caesar Julian began stepping up efforts to push back against incursions into the northern frontiers of the Roman Empire to encourage soldiers to engage these battles vigorously. Caesar Julian was giving out bonuses. Martin knew his conscience would not allow him to fight, so he decided this was a good moment to put in for his discharge. He said to Caesar, "I have been your soldier up till now. Now let me be God's soldier. Please give your bonus to someone who will fight and not to me." Caesar was not very happy about that and replied that Martin was a coward. Martin was only more committed then to his position and said, "I'm not afraid. If you won't release me, I will go out tomorrow unarmed and stand between us and them. But I will not fight. I will cross the enemy's lines unscathed, protected by the cross rather than a shield and helmet." Caesar Julian believed Martin when he said he wouldn't fight, and he threw him in prison to spend the night. And the next morning, envoys from the enemy came requesting terms for peace. So So Martin did not fight and was discharged after 25 years service. He was 40, and he began the next season of service in his life. Martin is the patron saint of soldiers and veterans. And in this willingness to bear witness to war as a non-combatant, as a person who would go and stand between us and them, whoever they are, whoever we are, it becomes clear he's the patron of chaplains as well. Like other saints who were soldiers, including Francis of Assisi, Ignatius of Loyola, and dozens of others, and like thousands of other veterans across the ages and decades, including those in our own diocese and those here this morning, they're all over. Martin continued to serve as a veteran. As a veteran, like other veterans, he was well trained to focus on the mission at hand. Martin's next season of service involved being ordained a priest and later a bishop. He also founded and led a monastic community in France. As bishop, even though he was a monastic, he traveled all over the geographic bounds of his diocese, the Diocese of Tours in France. He preferred to encounter people where they were, in the midst of their lives and their work, even more than to encounter them inside the walls of beautiful buildings. The chaplaincy of St. Martin of Tours continued into, through, and throughout his episcopacy, his time as a bishop. Our gospel from Luke today is redolent with the vibrations of that much older and longer Advent season that long began on St. Martin's Day, on November 11th. Jesus speaks in apocalyptic tone of how the temple in Jerusalem will be destroyed, and how wars and insurrections, earthquakes, famines, plagues, and instability are what should be expected until the reign of God comes in full. In such a beautiful and broken world, work is required of all of us. The reading from 2 Thessalonians admonishes that everyone should do their part for the common good. In Isaiah's words in the first reading, come as good news to those who have done their duty, those who have lived in the midst of turbulence and honored God and others the best they can, will live to see the new thing that God is doing. Their labor will not be in vain. The 11th day of the 11th month, beginning on November 11th, 1919, we in the United States observed Armistice Day, and it was made a legal holiday in 1938 and in 1954, following the sacrifices of U.S. personnel in World War II and the Korean conflict. Armistice Day was renamed Veterans Day, a day set aside to honor the service and sacrifice of all veterans. On Veterans Day, and on this Sunday, 2 days following, we express our thanks to veterans, not in a glib expression of thank you for your service, not in a breezy, easy expression of patriotism that doesn't cost the rest of us anything, not in a celebration of nationalism, and not in a glorification of militarism, not in any of those, but rather we express our thanks in a recognition of sacrifice, which is distinctively and nearly inescapably a religious term and category. Sacrifice, the giving up, the offering up of something valued for the sake of something else regarded as even more important or worthy. Service members give up lots of things of value for things understood to be of greater value. They're not all motivated by the same things or for the same reasons, but they all give something up. Comfort, choices, personal safety, personal preferences about many things. They give up some things for some other things, understood to be of greater value, including the common good. Sacrifice, though often undertaken in faith, is not undertaken without risk. Some veterans who sacrificed much come home with visible wounds, others with mostly invisible wounds. Some of them, in fact, the vast majority of them, transition successfully back to civilian life and find a new mission. But even now, an average of 17 veterans a day, 17 every day, die by their own hand in our country. 17 veterans, one active duty service member every day. I wonder if this category, this religious category of sacrifice, is connecting with you today. Is the Spirit stirring up something in you? Something you will risk giving up? Something that you value for the sake of something you value even more? Are you being called yourself, even if you're not a veteran, into a new season of service? Does that notion of sacrifice make some new sense, take some new shape? What will you offer up to our God? When the Maryhill, Washington Stonehenge was built in 1918, it was thought that the original Stonehenge in England had possibly been a place of ritual sacrifice. Maryhill Art Museum founder Samuel Hill asked, as the memorial was opened, "What is war but the sacrifice of our sons?" Today we would add, "What is war but the sacrifice of our children?" As a native of Klickitat County, Washington, Sam Hill saw what the Great War had cost his home county in those 14 particular lives. And from this came the idea for the recreation of Stonehenge there. When I visited that Stonehenge replica, that first in our country World War I memorial, that summer after graduating seminary with my brother and my cousin, I thought about sacrifice. The Vietnam War divided our family. Joe, my cousin, could not see his way clear to becoming a combatant in Vietnam. He thought of going to Canada. Facing the disapproval and disdain of our elders and his own internal objection to that particular war, and with his draft date looming, he joined the Coast Guard. That was a choice he felt he could live with. Steve, my brother, knew his draft number was about to come up, and he joined the Navy so that at least he had the choice of his branch of service. He became a corpsman and was embedded with Marines on the front lines in Vietnam. He was wounded twice in 4 months. After Vietnam, Joe went back to school and became a psychologist. He became a consultant to families and business, assisting them in dealing with and working to resolve divisive issues that often lead to the dissolution of family-owned businesses. After Vietnam, Steve went back to school and became a physician. He taught in two medical schools and was briefly in private practice. He came to understand medicine as his vocation during conversations with the Navy surgeon that patched him up at the Navy hospital in Pensacola as he recovered from his injuries after receiving his second Purple Heart. The sacrifices of my brother and my cousin were real. Their seasons of service have continued as veterans. And that day at the Maryhill Stonehenge, we stood at the altar dedicated on July 4th, 1918. Steve's the eldest. He stood in the middle. There's an altar in the middle of that Stonehenge replica. He stood in the middle. I stood on his right. Joe stood on his left. He opened a bottle of Veuve Clicquot, one of our favorite champagnes, and he poured it into aluminum camping cups. And the three of us raised a solemn toast to the dead of World War I. Grateful for their sacrifice and grateful also for the blessings of our continuing life together, for new callings and meaningful work, for milestones reached, for life on the other side of death. This morning, this Eucharist, once again, we, all of us, will offer what we call our sacrifice of praise and thanksgiving. And as we enter that liminal space, that place in between heaven and earth, between death and life, offering ourselves, may we be bold to risk sacrificing something valued for something even greater. We will lift up our hearts, and as we prepare to return to God's good world, let's not forget to also lace up our boots. Amen.